Hello and welcome to the Horror Screams podcast, part of course the Horror Screams Evolve website, and this is episode 41 of the podcast. I'm Stephen, and I'm joined as ever by our fellow hostage, which is Sarah. Hi Sarah, how's it going?
It's going well, how's it going with you?
Marvellous, yeah, very good, thanks. Yes, yeah, it's still summer, right?
It is still summer. It's cloudy. Luckily, it's not as hot as it's been elsewhere. Apologies to everyone else that's been roasting and cooking in fires. But
yeah.
The UK has been grey, which is great.
That sums up the UK. Grey. Yes. Yeah. We do apologise if any of you are currently on fire as a result of climate change's wrath. Everything will be okay in the end, right, Sarah? I mean...
It will, exactly. And this episode will, like, kind of soothe everything because it's all about water and sharks.
Yes, exactly. and also it proves that however bad things are, the Brody family are having a worse time than you are.
Absolutely. Arguably. That's brilliant. I love that. That's a good tagline.
Such bad luck. As we'll discover, as we, in episode 41, which was kind of timed for July because it sort of is all about summer and the first one's all about July the 4th, which obviously, by the time you hear this, will be a distant memory. However, yes. We are discussing the most summery of all horror franchises. And yes, of course, it's a horror franchise because it's a monster movie. That's what it is, which is the Jaws series. There are, thankfully, only four of the Jaws films.
Yes.
And they haven't made another one since 1987, probably for a good reason.
Yeah, for very good reasons.
Well,
who knows?
Well, that's it, isn't it? I'm assuming, I don't know if this is for sure, but I'm assuming this will work in a similar way to things like Psycho when Psycho was remade. I think they either have to or they will feel obliged to wait until Steven Spielberg is dead before they remake Jaws, because it hasn't happened so far. It seems really unlikely that it's going to happen anytime soon. It would be dog shit.
In its wake, instead, it's left us with movies like Sharknado and The Meg.
Yes, exactly. We've had four, almost 50 years of Jaws ripoffs, you know, shark movies, the sequels we're going to discuss. Non-stop shark movies, really, especially when you got to the period, like you say, you know, when we got to the period where CGI was possible at lower budgets as well as big budgets, with things like Shark Attack and Deep Blue Sea, all sorts of budgets there, and then Sharknado, the kind of self-conscious comedy ones, and now we've got the Meg 2, which, as I think as this episode is released, the Meg 2 is coming out across the world, so
yay.
Each shark movie's never going to go away.
No, which is great news, because we love shark movies.
We do, yeah. Before we head into Jaws, Sarah, have you got any favourite non-Jaws shark movies?
Oh, 47 Metres Down, as a kind of new one, will never get out of my mind. The terror and the suspense, and just so much happens in that, and the sequel to it as well. There's just so many of them, though, because I do stupidly love the Sharknado movies. The first three ones were just absolutely amazing. Okay, even I admit that 4, 5, and 6 especially was absolutely shite, but they're still so much fun. And Sharktopus as well. I love Sharktopus.
Oh, Sharktopus, yes, of course. Yeah, Sharktopus.
I think because of Jaws, it just made me love all of the shark movies. I don't think there's one out there that I hate, because even the shit ones, Zombie Shark was great. I love that film. Zombies and sharks. You know, I think that was a very low budget sci-fi movie that I don't think ever came out on DVD. If it did, I haven't got it and I need to get it, because that was really good as well. It was stupid, but really, really good. Two-headed shark, three-headed shark. Where did it go up to?
Six.
Five-headed shark?
I think there were six.
I've seen them all. And they're fucking ridiculous, but they're absolutely brilliant at the same time. And it's all thanks to Jaws. You know, they started
it
off. And I honestly don't believe there's a bad one out there. What about you?
Yeah, probably the same actually, because you know, whatever happens, I'm always there. I even watched House Shark, which is the one where it pops up out of the toilet and everything, which is kind of exactly what you think, but very endearing, you know, very kind of, oh yeah, well, you know, obviously this is the reason I watched a film called House Shark.
Yeah, yeah, and there was Sand Shark as well.
Ice Sharks as well. Yes. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do remember that one.
Mega, the really, really big ones. Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And Dino Croc and that kind of
Dino
thing.
Dino Croc and Super Gator.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the one with Tiffany beating up Debbie Gibson or vice versa?
I think it is the one. Is it one like them. Mega Shark versus Dino Croc, something like that? I've got a box set of them.
It wasn't enough to have, you know, Thingy versus Thingy. They had to have Debbie versus Tiffany as well. It wasn't enough to have two giant monsters. They had to have 80s pop sirens.
Yes. Exactly.
Some of them are genuinely good, though. As you know, some of them are bad, but hilarious. But as you say, 47 Meters Down is genuinely suspenseful and palm sweatingly. My God, I can't take this.
So intense. Yeah. Amazing. Just amazing. Love
it. It's brilliantly done, actually, that one, because it's as much about, well, it's very much about the shark, but it's as much about as running out of oxygen and,
it's like, what the fuck do you do? Do you run out of oxygen or do you get eaten by sharks? You know, it's the lesser of two evils. Have you seen, you've seen the sequel one as well, haven't you?
Yeah, which I quite liked, which is the one with, like, is it the underwater in, Mayan ruins?
Yeah. I wasn't too sure about it, but as it went on, it got more and more, again, more and more intense, just them being trapped in those pools, and it was just so good.
I liked Sharks in the Supermarket. I liked Bait, the Australian one. Have you seen that one? That's really
good. Yes, I think I have. Yeah, it rings a bell.
And the one I always liked, which I know is divisive, because it's one of those, it's not found footage, but it almost feels like it. And you only occasionally see beneath the surface, which is Open Water. I really like that one.
Oh, yes. Open Water is a good one. Yes.
And it's not necessarily a shark movie, but sharks are part of the threat that they face, isn't it? They're trapped and stranded in the water from a dive. They were left behind. Mm-hmm. Deep Blue Sea is really good fun, which is the one that I think, like Anaconda, was like the big Hollywood film that revived this kind of thing in the 90s, wasn't it? It was, you know, here it is on a big budget, and then these guys will go and do it on a much lower budget without LL Cool J. Samuel Jackson is in Deep Blue Sea. That's fantastic.
They're just so good. There's so many of them. Yeah, exactly. But you don't begrudge the fact that there's so many of them. I don't.
So they make them, they keep making them because people like us keep watching them, because it's like any of those things. They'll never go out of fashion.
Nope. And I am super excited for the Meg 2, The Trench.
Yes.
It looks really good. I haven't seen the Meg. Yeah, I haven't seen the first one since it came out. I remember going to the cinema to see it, and I've not seen it since. So I feel like I need to rewatch it. But the trailer, I don't think you necessarily, it's another one of those ones that you don't necessarily have to have seen the original or the first one to know what the hell's going on.
No.
It's a giant megalodon in the first one. I think this one, there's like two of them or more of them get released. So, I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, and well, yeah, me too. Yeah, these are a huge budget. So these are like, you know, all those movies we just mentioned, but on a budget that, you know, would have made 150 of those movies, which is quite interesting, I think, that, you know, these movies are huge. Also, they're based, like Jaws, they're based on trashy kind of straight-faced paperbacks. You know, I remember reading, I think it's just called Meg rather than The Meg, but Steve Alton wrote, and there's at least three of them. The second one's called The Trench, as is the film.
Oh, okay. But, does that mean there's going to be a third one as well, then?
Well, there's definitely at least three Meg books, because there's, I can't remember, the third one is Primal or something, I think, but Steve Alton wrote them, and like Peter Benchley, you know, he wrote these sort of very sort of serious, trashy, you know, lots of shark gore in there. movies that were then turned into these blockbusters. In the case of The Meg, you know, not entirely serious blockbusters.
No.
While in the case of Jaws, Peter Benchley's kind of sexed up, trashy, gory novel was turned into, you know, a sort of, well, a PG rated version of the same. I remember reading the Meg books, and I know there was talks of making films for years, like the guy that made Speed was going to make the film of Meg at one point, and then eventually, as we know, it ended up as a Jason Statham thing.
Mm.
It's a non-stop cavalcade of shark films. But
yes.
It begins, Sarah, in 1975, mm-hmm. when neither of us were born.
Yay.
And, you know, it was the 70s. And Jaws came out. And as I said, did you ever read Peter Benchley's book? Did you ever read Jaws, the book?
No, I haven't ever read the book. I just remember being traumatised by the film as a child.
Yes. And that's it, isn't it? Yeah. So we were a wee bit too, well, we were both obviously not born when this came out. This was the massive, you know, for a time until Star Wars. This was sandwiched in between The Exorcist in 73 and Star Wars in 77. So Jaws is 75, so it's in the middle of those two massive films. And for a time, this was the biggest movie of all time. I would have loved to have been around to see this in the big screen in 1975. The book, I read the book as a child. The book is rather different. It's really gory in a way that the movie's actually pretty gory, but the movie couldn't be as gory as the book is. Also, there's lots of sex in the book, and there's a kind of mafia plot. What's his name? Hooper. Richard Dreyfuss' character gets it on with Brody's wife in the book. So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, it doesn't add anything to it. The film did the right thing by doing what it did, clearly. And Peter Benchley is an interesting guy, a really smart guy, and late, I think in later life, became big on things like shark conservation, because I think he felt bad. Portraying a shark as an unrelenting monster. So he became, I think, a big kind of shark protector guy in the last stages of his life. And constantly wrote books about the ocean, often with monsters, or sea monsters, rather. The movie Jaws is a different beast. And boy, for me, I don't know about you, Sarah, but for me, Jaws was a movie that before I ever owned it on any format, it would be on TV every year. And it would always be something I'd look forward to watching it every time, like, ITV are showing Jaws again. and it was fantastic. It was one of my favorites, even, and because it was PG, because they could show it at 7 p.m in the evening for The Watershed, despite it being nasty and gory and completely heartless at times, this was the horror movie you could watch in like the evening with your family. What's your memory? When did you first watch it? Do you remember that?
It must have been, the first time I ever saw it was like probably the only bit I remember is like right at the end when Jaws jumps on the boat. So kind of pretty much like right at the end, I must have literally walked in at that point when my parents were watching it. And I'm pretty sure I must have been, I don't know, about 5 or 6. And I think my parents, I must have had a bad dream or something and come downstairs. And my parents were watching it. And I came in at that exact moment. The moment that you just, you know, it's like when you're watching a like movie and everything's kind of fine, and then as soon as like somebody else walks in the room, it then switches to the sex scene. It was kind of like that, only with me as a small child walking in on probably the most traumatic part of the movie and absolutely traumatizing myself. I think it took quite a while for me to actually sit and watch the rest of the film. I was probably like a good like 10 or 11 when I actually sat and watched the whole film. Because I think it traumatised me as a child. My parents just had to kind of rush me out and try and calm me down.
Yes.
But it's stuck in my mind. It's stuck in my mind. But no, it's bloody brilliant. Like sitting there and watching it again, it doesn't beat around the bush, does it? It's literally like straight in at it. You know, like early on, you get the woman on the beach who disappears, which kind of gives you a kind of idea that it's like kicking off like straight away. Her remains wash up. That's quite gruesome, isn't it? It's not necessarily what you see, just how like Roy Scheider and that kind of react when they find her. and just the kid in the middle of the sea, you know, when in the whole crowd of people that gets got on the Lilo, that's so bold for a movie at that kind of time, isn't it?
It is, and never to be repeated. You know, if you've seen really Jurassic Park,
it's really bloody as well.
It's really gory. It's hard. Yeah, it's remorseless. You know, there's no sentimentality around killing children or anything. And
no,
that sequence is one of the great horror movie sequences that I can remember. And I always thought it's interesting that when you get to Jurassic Park, which is also a great film, but when you get to Jurassic Park about almost 20 years later, you know that those kids are safe. You know, they're in peril, but you know that at this stage, there's not going to be a PG-rated Hollywood film that will kill off either of those two kids.
Yeah.
As convincing as the threat is, you know. But in 1975, this is what happens, you know.
You were not one's expecting immune. It.
And that's the bit that sells it. That's the bit that says this film takes no shit. You know, this film doesn't care about little Alex on his Lilo. Or indeed the dog. The dog never gets found, right? The dog disappears.
Yeah, the dog disappears. Poor Pippin.
And there's an awful moment. I mean, it's one of the few movies like this, I think, that not only does it kill off the little boy, but it shows some kind of aftermath. There's the awful haunting moment with his mum, who looks much older than she should be for such a little boy, but I think there's a lot of chatter about potentially what makes it even sadder is you think she's probably a widow. You know, there's a lot of people that have interpreted different things about what her character background is. But in any case, you know, there's that moment where she rightly is angry and furious and confronts Brody about, you know, the fact the town knew that there was a problem and the corrupt, famously, hilariously corrupt mayor didn't give a shit, and the beaches have to stay open because they need the income. And that's a really powerful moment because, you know, it's not just you've watched him die, but you've realised you've seen his mother's life ruined. You know, it's. I think that's an unusual...
Brody's as well. You feel really sorry for Brody because you know it's not his fault either. You know, he's been trying to tell the mayor ever since the girl washed up at the beginning. And he's kind of ignored, but he tries his best. That's what I love about Brody in the first one. You never feel that he's pathetic in any way, but you do feel sorry for him. But you just know that all he wants to do is the right thing. And that people Brody's are putting everything they can, you know, in front of him to stop him. And then you just feel so happy for him when they think they've caught the shark as well. So there's this huge hoo-ha, and everyone goes out to try and like kill a shark, which is hilarious as well, isn't it? The whole gathering of everyone getting into their boats off they tumble to get this shark. And then Brody's so happy when they bring in this shark. And you know that who is his guy that comes in? Is it Hooper?
Yes, Richard Dreyfuss, Hooper. Yeah. Wait a minute. Hopper, yes.
That's it, Hopper. Yes, we'll get it right. Yeah, he's like, you know what, I'm not convinced, blah, blah, blah. But he's like, I'd probably be the same because he'd be like, oh, look at Brady's little face. He's so happy that, you know, this is all over. I don't really want to tell him that this might not be him, you know, might not be the shark. But you kind of feel really sorry for him. But you just know it's not the shark. Everyone knows it's not the shark.
He's a great character. Roy Scheider's a fantastic actor. I think at this time he was best known for The French Connection before this. But in this, he's the lead, and he's an unusual hero because he's a very vulnerable hero. You can root for him. He's afraid of the water. You know, he's not a macho. I mean, Roy Scheider's a tough guy in a lot of movies, but in this, he's an interesting guy because of how wiry he was, you know, and how he looked. He could play both. He could play a really convincing bastard, but he could also play in this role. You know, there's the famous moment in the boat later on where Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss, you know, showing off their scars and things like that, which is an amazing moment. And Roy Scheider is just very shyly looking. You know, he's not got anything that would compare to their experiences. And he can't even crush a beer can because you think he's just got like a paper cup or something. And he's a character you totally root for because he's an everyman. He's an ordinary guy. And unusually, I suppose, we're with him because we know there's a shark attack from the very beginning. He knows he's the one that types in shark attack at the start when the body's discovered of Chrissy thingy. But it's convincing everybody else that counts, you know, which becomes almost absurd in Jaws 2, which we'll come to. But but in the first one, you know, geez, it's so frustrating.
He is, he's quite a complex character as well, because like you say, you know, he's kind of a tough guy. His family dynamic is hard to kind of gauge straight away, isn't it? He seems very overly, like the overly strict father and stuff, but then there's some really sweet moments he has with his kids and stuff, and you're like, actually, you know, he's a good dad. He's literally just, you know, looking out for his kids and stuff. There is some like kind of sweet moments, but to start off with, you think he's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a strict kind of ball buster.
He can do both, can't he? And one of the great moments, of course, which is foolishly recreated in Jaws the Revenge, which is, as we may suggest later, not such a good film, is the famous bit around the dinner table where he, you know, it's such a touching moment, especially if you're a parent, where he's his little boy is imitating all of his expressions and everything. And the movie has time for that. I mean, the movie moves like a shark, you know, it doesn't seem to ever kind of slow down, but it does slow down enough to have moments like that, which I think, without killing the pace or the suspense, I think that's the genius. I mean, let's face it, Spielberg has, you know, has made many great films, but you know, the genius of the film is that it feels like a kind of like, you know, Jesus, the shark attacks and then it's hunting the shark. It feels like this kind of roller coaster, but it does take time, which I don't think a lot of big movies these days do often enough, which is to have those little kind of quiet moments.
Yeah. Definitely
in
not.
In that case, a silent moment. You know, there's no talking in that. It's that great, lovely dinner table scene with him and his son.
Yeah, it is really nice. Special. It is really sweet. But yeah, you are right. I mean, if you just put the shark bits together in Jaws, it would probably be about, I don't know, what, 40 minutes?
Yeah.
If that, you know, if you just had the shark bits in it. And I think they kind of neglected... They kind of like overlook that in the rest of them and just kind of think, oh no, we've just got to put more and more shark action into it. Whereas the first one worked so well because it didn't have that in. It had those prime moments, like the opening scene when the girl gets taken, you know, that grabs your attention straight away and gets you thinking, all right, something's happening. Yep. Then it kind of like leaves it for a little while. Then you have the kid getting taken on the raft and then there's nothing for a long time, is there?
No,
because you're still kind of reeling from that. Then there's the whole hunt thing that you don't see an awful lot of.
No.
And then it's kind of, then you have like the whole like village argument and Quint with his fingernails down the blackboard every time.
It's fantastic. Robert Shaw, he's great. I mean, it's the perfect thing, isn't it? It's and I think that's it. The sequels don't get that. The original, a lot of the most powerful stuff, the shark is off camera, you know, that first sequence, which I've seen quite a few times compared to the Psycho shower scene, in the sense of it's a really violent sequence where you don't really see anything, you know, you don't see the shark in the opening sequence, but you get the impression of a powerful thing that's dragging the skinny dipper to her death. But it takes a long time for her to die as well. You know, she's dragged for a while and she clings onto that boy, not the actual boy, but the boy in the sea. And then she's killed, you know, so there's such savagery in that sequence, but it's all done by the music, which legendary. They had a limited amount of technical ability. I think the shark's an amazing thing because, you know, the CGI sharks look like CGI sharks, but at least here, in the few times you get to see it, at least it's a physical thing that's there on the set, that's life size.
The actors are reacting to
beast. They built this huge thing which they had to then take onto the real ocean, and that's the amazing thing about actually all these films, but especially Jaws, which is the good one. You know, they shot on the ocean. They didn't, obviously there's a few obvious bits that are in, like I think the famous head coming out, the head jump scare was done in a swimming pool, but so much of it was shot out to sea, you know, which they would never do now. Everything these days is blue screen, or, you know, most of the time they never left the studio. And CGI has killed the sense of anything really being in the same scene as the actor. But in this case, you've got a physical thing that's right there. And quite rightly, most of the time, they'll just suggest it anyway, which is where the fin gliding across the water or just the notes of that score, that music, is so powerful. Yeah, I think it's amazing. It holds up. I've watched so many times.
Yeah.
And it's still hilarious. You know, it's still really tense. Robert Shaw is fantastic. The three actors, you know, there's no one quite like them together in that boat.
No, that's just great, isn't it? Yeah, it's a brilliant scene. But once again, it's an emotional bit as well, you know, because it starts off lighthearted, and then like Quint then kind of goes on to say what he did before he was a sailor and stuff, and you're just like, holy crap.
Yes. And there's the big horror, isn't it? You know, the tale of the Indianapolis, which, you know, which is his story, which breaks up that moment of kind of show me the way to go home, drunken revelry. He has this horrific tale of people in the water being eaten, which is one of the great scenes in anything, really. It's there's not enough we can say about Jaws, I don't think, in terms of... I can't think of anything that ever sits. It doesn't age. There's a few films from the 70s that, as far as I'm concerned, just don't age. One is The Exorcist. This is another. There's a few others. Like, I think Carrie still, when I watch Carrie, I still get that same impact that I always had and still feel incredibly sad by the end. The Exorcist is still really disturbing. And this is still really scary. But also, when it needs to be, it's really funny as well. And it's got all the right characters. Still get annoyed at the mayor.
Always.
Murray Hamilton is the mayor. He's a fantastic actor, actually. He plays that part well. It was not a boating accident. Richard Dreyfuss is great. I love how quirky and young he is in this. He's like 20 something.
And it's sad that he never came back.
Yes, because of course, because in the book he dies, but in the film he lives, doesn't he?
He's there lives, at the end.
I can't remember for sure, but I've got a weird feeling he's killed in that shark cage sequence in the book, but he definitely dies in the book.
I like him, so I was kind of glad that he survived the film. I mean, you kind of think, I suppose it's kind of cowardly, but anyone else in that position would have done the exact same thing. If that was me, I'd be like, I'm just going to stay down here until he goes away. I've got some oxygen. I'll be fine.
And that scene's nerve-wracking. It was brilliantly done. There's all sorts of great... You really feel you're part of... You're on that boat with them in the last half an hour or so.
And the bit when he goes out, they go, him and... what's his name? Brody go out and find Bill Gardner's boat.
Oh yes, yeah.
And find him kind of like drowned and half eaten in the bottom of the boat. That's kind of that's quite scary as well when he kind of pokes out from there.
Yes, well, yeah, and the great thing is that still really works. Like I've seen Jaws a couple of times on the big screen, and I actually watched it in 3D last year because they was it an anniversary? Yes, it was the 45th. Yeah, it's 1975. That doesn't add up. What was last year? 2022. I don't think it was an anniversary, actually, because it's the 50th in 2025. No, it wasn't. Forget everything I've just said. but anyway, last year they re-released it in 3D, which I was kind of skeptical about, but I'd heard the 3D was really good. And actually, it's still I'd rather watch it normally rather than wearing a pair of glasses on top of my pair of glasses, but it did add something, it did add a depth to what you were looking at, and as it's a lot of it is the the wide ocean, it kind of makes sense. And that jump scare with Ben Gardner's boat, where the like you said, the kind of half-eaten body jumps out or the head pops out, still got a jump, including my daughter, which I was really pleased to see. Scaring the shit out of a new generation. That still really works as a jump scare. And you can imagine in 1975, never seen anything like this movie. It's tremendous. The movie's not short of scares and gore. There's severed legs.
I reckon it's still traumatizing children, even to this day, that walk in when they shouldn't.
And that's it. This is a movie that didn't just make a lot of money, but it changed everybody. You know, it became a joke. You know, you'd do the dan 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 dan
if you're in the bath, yeah,
or at the beach. Everybody knew the music, even if they hadn't seen the movie yet.
It's kind of why I won't swim in the sea, no matter where I am. The amount of shark movies I've seen in my lifetime, you're like, you can fuck right off when I'm going in there.
Yes.
No way. I know what happens. All these movies I've watched, it's real life, okay?
Exactly. And it begins here, and it's, you know, it's the same with Psycho.
Never been anywhere where there'd be a great white, but, you know, you never know.
Well, come to that. And, you know, interestingly, Jaws the Revenge, where he... in fact, you know, Jaws the Revenge, which is nonsense, but, you know, it almost... We're at the point with things like climate change and stuff where things are changing so quickly. It could almost happen, you know, and there was reports, I think, this year of tiger sharks and things like that being seen in the UK waters. So things have shifted to the point where the ridiculous portrayal of sharks in these movies, which don't act like this or typically show up in places like this, are actually probably going to come true.
Probably,
but anyway, yeah, crossover. You know, this movie is the thing that people think about when they're in the sea, and everyone knows the theme tune. And,
yeah. I think you've been showing, yeah. Haven't they shown, I mean, I don't know if you would go and actually do this or watch it, but haven't they done like showing Jaws like on a big screen at like an open air, like swimming pool and stuff? So you're actually watching it while you're floating in the swim. Would you do that?
They have, because they did things. They showed The Descent in a cave as well. Yeah, they've done. And The Blair Witch was shown in like woodland. Yeah, I think it's called Secret Cinema. Yeah, is that what it's called? Secret Cinema or something similar to that. And yeah, no, well, maybe. I don't know. Depends. Where are
we? Two reasons why I wouldn't do that. The first reason, obviously, because it's going to be dark and you're in a swimming pool and there's sharks on the screen. And the second one is that the film is quite a long film.
2 hours.
Think how pruny you're going to get if you're sat on like a lilo just dangling in the water for 2 hours.
It's actually ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah, I don't think I'd do that. It'd be so uncomfortable. Surrounded by other people. Oh, what the hell? Yeah, definitely the cave.
Dropping your popcorn in the swimming pool. Well,
spilt my 2 litres of Tango into me. Yes, exactly. What am I going to wee? You'd have to wee in the pool. Like,
well, yeah, to be fair. That would be one of the only good reasons. Yeah.
Which means 100 other people have done the same.
Yeah.
So you're just really floating in piss at that stage. Halfway through.
They haven't really. Just strangely warm.
But yeah, come to
think. Didn't really think about that.
Maybe I don't think I could bear that. And this, and
yeah, there's three reasons now.
I'm not so sure. I think the woods I'd be okay because I don't think I'd be freaked out if I was on my own.
Yeah, I think that would be really awesome watching Blair Witch in the woods. That would be cool.
The cave can fuck off. I'm not going to watch anything in the cave.
No.
Especially Descent, which is the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The Descent is harrowing. Oh, good God, The Descent. Yeah, well, that's a separate thing. But The Descent's terrifying. So Jaws, yeah. Well, Jaws has got it all. Do you know what I also love, which again, you don't tend to get in these things, and they try it in the sequels to a degree, and they don't really pull it off, which is the sense of a small town. You know, you get a lot of local character, like the old woman and some of the old boys that you see in the background or chipping in during the town meetings. I love all that because it feels like you've gatecrashed a town meeting. You know, it feels like a very real town.
Yeah.
And from what I know, I think, you know, there's quite a lot of non-actors in Jaws. I think they did, and it sort of shows, you know, I think they did. Through people that were kind of just townsfolk to be in the background or to say a line or something. And I think that really makes Amity, you know, into a convincing kind of place. And of course, it makes it scary as well because you're like, oh, geez, they've got a pretty insurmountable problem. I love Robert Shaw, though. Robert Shaw is giving it large. You know, Robert Shaw, I've forgotten how, because he died very young, but I think I'm pretty sure he's only in his 40s in this film, but he a hard drinking kind of actor, great Bond villain in From Russia with Love.
Yeah.
great actor, dead ridiculously in his 50s. You know, a few years later, he was already dead. But he's so fantastic, and he's giving it big, and, you know, the shot, the fin, the whole damn thing, you know. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, just tremendous. The three of them together, because they're such chalk and cheese personalities. Richard Dreyfuss, a bit geeky, and obviously the expert, Robert Shaw, the old sea dog, and Roy Scheider, the, as we said, kind of a complex character. Brilliant trio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which you'd never get again, you know. It's
No, unfortunately, they don't manage to get that kind of level of relatability or different characters in a room together for any of the other movies, unfortunately.
No.
It was a one-off. I mean, you can definitely tell that it was, even though the shark dies in pretty much every movie, you know there's going to be another one. So I'm guessing they probably were already thinking, you know, we are going to do another one after this. He might have killed the first one, but, you know, where there's one shark, another one will turn up. We'll do another one.
Like but Jason or Michael Myers. Oh, he's alive.
Yeah. They're just like, we can just resurrect it. It'll be fine. But I'm guessing it didn't work out how they wanted it to. And unfortunately, it was never quite the same. As it never had the impact that the first one did.
No.
And still does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and this was the beginning of what we've been stuck with ever since, isn't it? Because, you know, although obviously sequels always existed with, like, all the Dracula films and things like that, carry-on films, this was the beginning of, like, the big blockbuster sequels, because the Jaws made so much money, Exorcist and The Omen made so much money. So that's when you began seeing part two, you know. The Godfather part two, I suppose, was the big one that started that. But we got Jaws 2 in 3 years' time, and we got Omen 2 a couple of years later. Exorcist 2, which is bonkers, totally bonkers. And I quite like Exorcist 2 because it's so far off what The Exorcist was. It's just totally off the tree. And now, of course, we're stuck with it forever. You know, Toy Story 4, and it's like bingo cards, Fast and Furious 10. Never fucking is. Saw 10 this year. Halloween 11-12, Friday the 13th. Every year in the 80s.
18.
It's like the footballers at Friday Season 6, Lethal Weapon 4. You know, it's just non-stop. And they do the trick of, like, I remember in the 80s being really excited to watch Friday the 13th, the final chapter, and, you know, the voiceover of the Toast Part 4. And the voiceover was like, today is Jason's unlucky day. Friday the 13th, the final chapter. A year later, Friday the 13th, a new beginning. What? Hang on a minute.
But you told us it was the final chapter. Why does no one ever tell us the truth? Yeah.
And they did it again with Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday. Okay, this time we've seen him being blown up. A few years later, Jason X, he's in space.
Yeah. Well, they're doing it with Insidious as well, isn't it? Because the last one was Insidious, the last key.
Yes.
And now we've got the Red Door. Right. So you're like, everyone just quit with the finality of these sequels, because we know there is going to be another one.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And yeah, because they, you know, they keep making money. Jaws. And, well, interestingly, I think it's quite interesting. So Jaws 2 came out in 78, and it actually came out after what is actually a much better film than Jaws 2, which is Piranha, you know, the ripoff.
Yes.
The kind of...
It's
kind of jokey.
First kind of thing. Yeah. That Piranha's wants to be great. Like Jaws, but exactly. All of them that don't even like involve sharks, like you say, your anacondas and stuff. They're like, well, we've done it with sharks, we'll do it with piranhas. Yes, like a aquatic animal as well that eats people. And then they're like, well, what else can we do? We can do snakes, we can do alligators, we can do wild boar. When was boar? Well, sorry, not boar, like razorback and stuff. They were the 80s as well,
weren't
they?
Razorback was really good, 84-ish. Yeah, razorbacks. Yeah, razorbacks, exactly. Very Jaws-ish. Yeah,
so you kind of have to feel like Jaws sparked off all of these, like, killer animal type films, to be fair. Yeah, and Orca, etc. They did a killer whale one, didn't they?
Yeah, Orca. And they were all, a lot of these were late 70s. Piranha beat Jaws 2 into the cinemas, which is quite fun. And I rewatched Piranha recently, the Joe Dante film, and it's really good, you know, and it's really tight. And the original beat, Jaws. Yes.
Yeah, it probably beat Jaws 2 in, like, ratings and success as well, to be fair.
This is so low budget, probably in terms of profit, yeah. I mean, it's... And it knows, you know, it's Piranha's pretty jokey, but it also, like the first Jaws, it's not afraid to set the piranha loose on a group of kids. You know, it's gory and it means business when it needs to mean business. And I think that's quite interesting because when they came to make Jaws 2, which obviously is a huge movie and it's got that great, I didn't have the poster, but I had the novel, like the novelization when they used to bring a big movie out and then someone would write a novelization of the movie.
I had the
paperback, which has got that great sequence, which I think is probably the best scene in the film, of the water skier. And a bit like with the original Jaws poster, the size of the shark behind her in the poster on the novel is so out of proportion. You know, the shark is like the size of a skyscraper. Which they couldn't possibly do in the film. And indeed popping out of the water in a weird vertical kind of way. Which sharks don't tend to do.
No.
To say boo.
That is a good part, though. I agree. I like that bit.
It's a really good sequence. And that was the poster image for this. And, you know, and the tagline was really good. You know, it was an obvious one. But just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water was the tagline that then was itself ripped off by other taglines. You know, just when you thought the terror was over. You know. And you know, it was big, and it was another film that, well, it's an interesting film actually, Jaws 2, because I remember reading about it, and it's as interesting a film in terms of its production as the original, which not famously they couldn't get the shark to work, and it took forever to get it made. And Jaws 2 itself, I think Spielberg was interested in making a film based on Robert Shaw's speech. So, you know, making a film about the real life incident with shark attacks in the Indianapolis.
Would
have been a total departure, but would have been really interesting. And they got John Hancock, the guy that made a really creepy film called Let's Scare Jessica to Death. He was the original director of Jaws 2, and he was planning something much harsher, you know, harsher death scenes. Brody was going to be more in a kind of suffering PTSD because he's feeling guilty about the events of the original. The mafia were involved, which I think was a connection to the original book. But he was sacked. And in the end, you know, we ended up with, I think, only one of his shots, because he was a director for, I don't know how long, but for a while until he was sacked. And I think the only shot of his that survives in the film is that really creepy moment where you see the fin coming into the harbour and it casts a shadow. The shark casts a shadow as kind of dusk, and that's I think the only scene that he shot. That's in the film. And in the end, of course, it became this kind of sort of streamlined teenagers in peril kind of Saturday shark fever kind of you know, well, we've got to appeal to the kids, so let's have a bunch of teenagers.
I think that's what annoyed me about it a lot as well. Obviously, time's moved on. Brody made it through. You know, he and his wife are still really paranoid about sharks in the water. They're very careful of their kids. Their kids have grown up a little bit more. So they've got their son, is it Michael, is the older one. He's now a teenager. And then the younger boy, Sean, is what, like 10 or 11, something like that. So he's kind of hanging around with his cooler older brother and that kind of thing, and it's basically based around them. He doesn't want them to go in the water. They really want to go in the water and do stuff, but again the shark comes back, and it's just the angle of it this time is just, it just feels so weird considering how they went about it the first time around and how everybody didn't believe Brody and stuff to start off with. They're basically doing it again. He is a little bit more kind of shell-shocked, because I suppose he does have a bit of PTSD going on about him because he is incredibly twitchy, isn't he? He's drinking even more than he was in the first one, smoking more. He is a bit more twitchy, a bit more trigger-happy because he knows that he was right the last time. But you're just like, why didn't anyone listen to him? because again, the same kind of scenario happens, but they seem to treat him even more differently. They seem to kind of be ridiculing him more than they were in the first one. And this time around, yeah. He seems more pathetic about it as well. You kind of feel like it's all kind of shifted and it, something feels a bit off about that whole scenario. Whereas, you know, we were all here the first time. You should kind of like heed Brody's warnings a bit more. And okay, you feel sorry for him that he's a little bit broken by it all, which is understandable, but you'd think he'd also kind of toughen up to it as well.
Well, yeah.
And stand up for himself a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, it is a bit of a bore in the sense of you do have to go through to get to the good stuff, which obviously is the shark stuff. You have to go through the whole thing of him. I mean, everybody's back, aren't they? His wife's back. Lorraine Gary is Mrs. Brody, who's not the most exciting actress in the world. Or indeed character.
No, you put up with her in the first one because she's not in it too much. But yeah, she's kind of in it a bit more this time. And you're a little bit like, she is. Oh, yeah, a little bit abrasive, a bit annoying.
At some point I found out in like the making of and whatever, I found out that she was the wife of, I've forgotten what his name was. She was the wife of like the Universal Studio exec. So, there's a little bit of,
you feel like character wise, the dynamic between the two of them has shifted as well. She's less of the kind of doting wife in the second one and more of the kind of critical, what he's going a little bit mental type. Things and you're like, but why are you all treating Brody like this? He was the hero. He killed the shark the first time. Give him a bit of credit. And and he just ends up like acting like a madman when he goes into the with the photo, which is great, by the way. I actually love the photo development bit. It kind of starts off with two divers that find the wreck of the orca at the beginning of the film, and they start taking photos of the ship, and then the shark turns up and kills them. And then eventually, as the story goes on, they recover the camera, and someone goes, we should probably develop these photos and have a look. And it gets like, it's really cool because you don't get to see that these days, do you? Like the old school, like dark room and, the millions of trays with the developing fluid and it takes forever to like see what comes up on the pictures. And Brody chooses the most grainy picture that could be a kind of a shark's eye and just kind of busts in on like a Nemez town council meeting like a complete madman. It's just a bit awkward and a bit, I don't like it. I don't have the kind of same feeling about it that you do with the first one.
No, because it is ridiculous. Because this is the classic sequel thing, isn't it? This is Die Hard 2, which is
overacting.
Die Hard 2 has the line, doesn't it? With Bruce Willis doing the same thing, trying to convince people that the terrorists are invading the airport or whatever. How can the same shit happen to the same guy twice, is his line. And this is it. Brody's there, like you said, driven to being a man, waving around a photo and people are going, what the fuck, is that seaweed? No, it's a shark. And the audience is showing, it's a fucking shark, because we know it's Jaws 2.
Yeah.
Don't you know you're in Jaws 2? And it's the same with Die Hard. This is the sequel thing of, well, we've got to have the mayor. Everyone's back. It's a bit like that episode of The Simpsons where everyone turns up to say their catchphrase, Nick or whoever, Troy McClure. The mayor turns up to say his catchphrase, well, we're not closing the beaches. That woman, that woman with the glasses, who's also in Jaws the Revenge, she's called Mrs. Taft, I think. She's in a kind of background bit in Jaws the Revenge, but she's like the town, town chairwoman or something. She's in it just to be there. Everyone's back. We don't care. We don't want everyone back. We just want the shark to get on with eating some teenagers. Brody's a bit of a drunk and no one believes him, even though in his office he's got a trophy saying, Amity Man of the Year, 1975. Yeah. Don't you trust this guy? He saved your community getting eaten 3 years ago. I think that's the stuff that wears thin when you watch it again, because you're like, well, yeah, do we have to go through this again?
And they kind of like, they messed up the music as well. The music's not as effective in Jaws 2 as it is in the first one. So in the first one, you have the kind of dun 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 dun, threatening kind of dark sounding music. Whereas when the shark approaches in 2, it's a little bit more jingly jangly. I'm like, why has it gone so upbeat? Is the shark wearing a sombrero? Got some maracas or something? trying to make it a little bit more lighthearted. Yeah, I was like, why? It's not as effective.
No,
and again, you know, they're afraid to kill the kids off this time. Because I suppose they've probably done it already, but this one's kind of more child involved because it involves Brady's children and their friends. Yet, you know, there's so many chances the shark could have got them. He only kind of gets one or two of them, doesn't he? And
yeah,
that redhead, screamy redhead girl needs a slap.
Which one is that? Is that the Miss Amity? Who's Miss Amity? No, that's the other one.
Yes, I think it was the other one. It was her friend or whatever. But yeah, I think she's like a redhead or something. And it ends up with just her and Sean when everyone else has made it to the island.
Yes.
And the shark's there as Brody kind of like, he's shuffling down the cable. I mean, it's a cool way to kill off the shark, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, with the cable.
I like the final ending with the electricity cable and stuff. That's all cool. You get hints of that because they kind of snag it early on and lift it up from the ground. And you're like, ha ha ha, underground electricity cable. This could play a part later on in the story. I will remember this moment. and then when he trawls it back up again, you're like, I knew it was going to make another appearance, like the microwave in Last House on the Left, the remake. It's like, I know this is going to be in the film somewhere. So yes, it's a cool shark kill, but for God's sake, someone, you know, drown the screaming girl.
I think that's Donna Wilkes. So I'm pretty sure that's Donna Wilkes with the Great Flares, isn't it? Because she became she has a terrible role in this. But she became a kind of slasher movie thing because she's in Blood Song. I think it is the slasher movie with Frankie Avalon, the singer.
Okay.
And she's got like a leg brace in that, so she's a kind of, well, I guess it's an attempt to have a disabled final girl character, and she's quite good in that, and she's quite good as Klaus Kinski's daughter, I think, in Schizoid, another slasher film where he seems to have a bit of a pervy fondness for kind of looking at her. So yeah, she did do better things, but yeah, she's got a dreary, hysterical role in this. The boys, I mean, this is an interesting series because the Brody boys are in some way or another in all four, but in every film they're played by different actors. So you don't ever have they're underwritten, they don't have any, they're not interesting.
The first two, they're kind of literally just they're kind of mentioned in passing. Well, obviously they're in two a little bit more, but again, like you say, they're not that interesting, but they're not that annoying either.
No, I don't
mind them.
Yeah,
they could be worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You know, the score for the original Jaws. This is the only Jaws sequel that John Williams actually came back to write new music for. Like all of the others, use the theme.
I feel bad for saying it, but I'm like, he should have just stuck with the original, because you know you can't go wrong with that. I think it was a bad idea to kind of play around with it, and everyone's kind of forgotten that anyway, because we just always remember the original.
Yeah, and the original has some great adventure movie music when they're out to sea and they're trying to bag the shark and it becomes kind of Moby Dick. There's a great kind of more jaunty kind of, which fits the first one at that stage of the film where it becomes three men in a boat. You know, kind of jaunty theme of them trying to snag it. But I think the best thing about his score in this is the bit for the water skiing attack, which is a really kind of frenzied bit of music. Although when I rewatched it, the water skiing attack, which I always remembered as being a kind of terrifying sequence, sort of intense thing, it does have a sort of slapstick element of bad luck where where the woman ends up accidentally pouring gasoline on herself.
Yes.
Almost, you know, an almost comedy of errors. And accidentally shoots off a flare at the wrong time and blows herself.
I feel like that was probably something that I would do if I ended up. Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember there's a moment in, this is a slightly, maybe slightly more obscure reference, but there's a hilarious sequence in Slugs, the movie, which is a hilarious film that we must cover at some time. Where there's an old bloke in a greenhouse that gets the slug, and obviously these are not just slugs, they're you know, horrible flesh bitey nasty bastard slugs. He gets a slug in his glove, in his gardening glove, and his way of dealing with it is to hack off his hand. But in the process, he I can't remember exactly, but I think he must knock over some paraffin that happens to be lying around. And he accidentally blows up the greenhouse in the process of hacking off his own hand. So he kills himself, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
In this ludicrous charade, which obviously was the result of watching the woman that pours petrol on herself.
Yeah.
Too, you know, oh, too. God.
Oops, now no one will know it was a killer slug.
So this is, yeah, he just blew himself up,
governor.
I like that, you know, they, yeah, I mean, I do like that the yeah, teenagers. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? This came out, I suppose it was right in the middle of stuff when stuff was changing, like Carrie is, I suppose, the start of the proper start of horror movies being very much pitched at teenagers, which would soon lead on to the slasher movies of, you know, Halloween, which,
yeah,
which came out the same year as Jaws 2. Saturday Night Fever was the big hit of that period, and you get weird hybrids like Prom Night, which is basically Saturday Night Fever meets Friday the 13th, you know, with disco music. And so I get why there's so many teenagers in it, but I like the fact that the only character development is Keith Gordon playing a nerd, you know, and saying things like, well, I'm thin, I wear glasses, you know, I've got no chance with Flouncy Bouncy or whatever her name is. And that's about it. You know, you kind of like Keith Gordon because he's Keith Gordon, and Keith Gordon's always the likable geek in Christine, obviously, he's the geek that turns. But it's a shame that the teenagers have even less character than the Jason victims that were coming around. Apparently Roy Scheider hated making this and, you know, didn't want to make it and presumably was persuaded by a very large check. But who would want to say that line when, the open wide, the one-liner that he has to say when the shark bites something.
Bites the cable.
Nobody would want to deliver that line. I mean, he's a... Yeah.
He's a proper Hollywood actor. Just like, really want me to say this cheesy bollocks. I mean, everyone remembers him for We're Gonna Need a Bigger Boat anyway, so, you know.
Yeah, which, and he's so good. And in this, I think there is a degree, there's parts of Jaws 2 where I think, the fact that he was obviously didn't want to make this film occasionally shows in a good way, you know, there's a sense that Brody's a bit pissed off, and then you get the impression that Roy Scheider's a bit pissed off as well. So I think maybe it helped, but I still would rather, I'd like to see what the Jaws 2 could have been if they'd have gone with what seemed to be a more kind of darker, no teenagers, stripped down kind of, you know, Brody on the edge, the shark's back, the town's gone to shit kind of thing, which I think was the intention. But that's, you know, that's Hollywood. And like with the first one, though, this was one that turned up on TV like once a year or something when I was growing up. So I loved this growing up. You know, I'd watch it every year. I'd occasionally get the first two confused. I'd think, well, which is the one where the shark bites on the cable? Oh, it's Jaws 2, you know. And I think, so I have really fond memories of it. And I think it, like Jaws, it's probably a nice kind of entry-level horror movie for kids to watch, you know. Because it doesn't have sex in it, and it's a little bit gruesome, but nothing too much.
Yeah, it's decidedly kind of less gory in a way, isn't there? I mean, there's definitely a lot less blood in 2 than there is in the first one. But there's still quite a big sense of dread and threat with the shark stalking everybody, you know, pretty much all the time.
Yeah, I like the bit where, what's her name, the town... the town kind of model, the beauty or whatever, the beauty contest winner, her boyfriend is dragged, isn't he, at one point. That's a nice sequence. I think that's quite disturbing.
He's on the boat,
I think, and he's dragged underwater by the shark. That's quite terrifying because he plays that quite well.
And isn't that the one where they sink the Coast Guard helicopter as well?
Oh, yeah, it's a helicopter.
That's kind of cool as well.
Yeah, that's the kind of big sort of, you know, that's the kind of thing you only got in a big budget film like this, isn't it? You know, you wouldn't, Piranha couldn't afford a helicopter, but this could. I do like the fact that because of that whole thing with Mrs. I just accidentally poured petrol on my head. I do like the fact that they have the shark. That's kind of a bit like the Phantom of the Opera. So it's a scarred shark.
Yeah.
Like Michael Crawford in Phantom of the Opera.
Face. Yeah, it does look cool. The shark is cool when you get to see it up close. Unfortunately, I feel like I'm kind of torn because I kind of want to see more of the shark, but then if you see more of it, it becomes less scary. But yeah, I forgot about that bit. Yeah, the scarred shark face is kind of cool. At least you know that that's the definite shark that you're after as well.
Yeah, not some other one that's just showed. Oh God, there's two of them. Oh well, that's the one. Yeah, that's the scarred one. That's our
killer. That's the one we go for.
I do rather. Yeah, I mean, there's some. I feel bad for dissing it because for years I loved this film and you know it was like I said, it was just a mainstay of TV watching in the 80s. Yeah. It would always be on TV once a year at least. ITV about 7 o'clock. Adverts every quarter of an hour.
News halfway through. Yeah.
Bernard Matthews, yeah, exactly, yeah, news, yeah. And Jaws 2 continues after news at 10. The hell? Not just news at 10, though, it would be the local news, the weather, effort.
To stay up for like an hour later than you needed to.
So you realise you'd be watching Jaws 2 pretty much for the whole evening because there was about 40 minutes of news in the middle.
Yeah.
Who was that?
You're like, where are we? I've forgotten what we're up to now. That's the best thing about, well, yeah, VHS. You just tape it and watch it the next day and, like, fast-forward the news.
Can you imagine if they did that, they applied that now, you know, you're watching Netflix, Breaking Bad continues after news at 10 and the local weather.
Yeah. There would be uproar.
It's a total
outrage. But, yeah, sorry, you're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, Jaws 2 has its annoying bits, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not that bad. Like you say, it does follow on from the first one because you still have Brody in it. Mm. You see the kids have grown up a little bit more. You feel like you're kind of following the story.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been really, really bad. And like you kind of then go, oh, yeah, we'll move on to Jaws 3. And you're like, ah, OK, yeah, I understand. Jaws 2 could have been a lot worse. Really, you know, if we're ranking things at the moment, it's Jaws first, then Jaws 2.
Well, yeah. And this is maybe it's an unusual. So because horror is interesting, isn't it? Because like, for me, the first Amityville Horror is not the best one. You know, I much prefer the second one. Yeah. And the first Friday the 13th film is really great and I love it and I've watched it so many times, but I like some of the sequels better, you know?
Yeah.
And
some of the later ones better,
Even Halloween.
I can't put a favourite on Saw because, you know, they all make up the bigger picture.
Yes.
There's something amazing in every single one of them.
Yeah, the Saw movies are very clever. Yeah, and I mean, there's no question for me, Exorcist and the first Scream are the best ones. But there's a lot of horror series where actually, you know, when I go back and I think, well, I actually like this sequel better. You know, I think this is much better than the first one. But the Jaws movies, they are maybe a rare series where they are genuinely in descending order. You know, you get to... Yeah, Jaws is so far above all of the others. Jaws 2 has its good points. And then when you get to the last two, we're
progressively worse after that. You're like, actually, Jaws 2 is pretty good.
And who'd have thought it that, you know, well, we'll come to Jaws the Revenge, but there's a point in Jaws 2 where we're almost like a preview of what's to come. Brody asks his wife if, you know, if it's possible that a shark could go after someone in revenge for the person that killed the other shark. And she says, oh, no, you know, don't worry, mate.
Don't be silly.
Sharks don't take it personally. How quickly they would take that back and go, well, actually, sharks don't take it personally. Yeah. But we'll come to that. So Jaws 3, or rather Jaws 3D, Sarah, which...
Jaws 3D.
And they made these things a bit apart. You know, these days, of course, we have Fast and Furious movies every 2 years and the Saw movies for a while were every year. It took 5 years to bring this out and it did coincide with the 3D revival of things like Friday the 13th Part 3 This has a very similar moment, actually. Friday the 13th, part 3D, which is great fun, much better than Jaws 3D. It has a very similar moment with a tranquilizer dart that comes to the, it's a thing in part 3, but in Friday, rather. But that's a similar 3D effect. But yeah, so this is part of the 3D boom. And probably rightly, they made the decision to shift it across, away from Amity, so we don't have to have the mayor, again, refusing to close the features, and that woman with the glasses.
Yeah, the same scenario. Yeah, exactly. No, the concept of Jaws 3 is brilliant. I love it. I love the plot. The, you know, just the synopsis and, the shark, or a great white shark has made it into SeaWorld. And you're like, well, there we go. You know, that is a genius idea.
The potential for that is so big, and the film is not so big.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because I really love the idea, but yeah, the 3D was just actual dog crap. It was so bad. I tried to watch it again, like recently for the rewatch with my 3D glasses, and I was just like, you know what, fuck this. This is, just as bad. Three 3D glasses as watching it without, to be fair. They didn't quite. Didn't quite get it, but the concept is a great idea, and I'm still kind of, I do find it a lot of fun, but it is ridiculous in places as well. But yes, you said it's like, it took them 5 years to bring this one out, so it's kind of moved on a lot more in terms of storyline. Brody's not in it anymore. He's already passed away, hasn't he, in this one?
But he's still around. It's in four, where he dies in between three and four. He died of a heart attack in between three.
That's it. So Mr. and Mrs. Brody are around in three, but it's nothing to do with them. Like you say, they're not in Amityville. Amity Island. They're not there anymore. Amityville.
If only. Well.
Now, there's a concept. There is a concept for you for the next one.
I'm amazed that no one has picked up on that and done, because there's so many, isn't it? There's even what's it called? There's Amityville Vibrator, isn't there? That's a genuine film. I'm amazed that no one's somehow done an Amityville shark movie, given that they're pretty much are the same name.
It's not there. It's not there. It's based in SeaWorld, so it's basically based on the two children of the Brodies. So older son Michael is now like, I don't know, what is he, like a maintenance guy at SeaWorld, but he's quite high up. He's got a good job. He gets well paid.
Yeah.
For SeaWorld.
Yeah, he's got it going on, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's kind of in with one of the female trainers and stuff. That's his girlfriend and everything's great. And yeah, they're basically putting on a huge show at SeaWorld. So they have everybody kind of like working on like water ski shows and things like that. And that's how the shark gets into SeaWorld. They're kind of out in the ocean practicing and doing like formations on water skis and stuff. The shark kind of like gets kind of attracted by them falling in the water and kind of follows them back, doesn't he? And they've got this big kind of like lagoon part to it. And it's like an amazing, like brand new opening of this new part of SeaWorld that's kind of under the lagoon. So you can see all the animals underwater, and there's like glass tunnels and things like that. And there's going to be this grand opening, and a great white shark follows them into the lagoon without being noticed by anyone at all. And that's kind of basically the premise of it. It kind of goes around and one by one starts picking off security guards and maintenance people. It's kind of fun, but also very far-fetched at times as well, isn't it?
Yes, and it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I've been to SeaWorld, and I've also watched the absolutely mortifying documentary Blackfish, which talks about how SeaWorld outrageously treated the killer whales and other things that they had in captivity, and led to their untimely deaths.
Yeah, I rewatched Blackfish recently as well. I was like, oh, you know what? It's been a long time since I've depressed myself watching this. I'm going to watch it again.
It's appalling. Yeah. And going there as well is not just because of that, because I went before that, is a strangely depressing experience. This one's weird. I mean, it feels partly like an advert for SeaWorld. There's moments where, look at our new underwater tunnels. They look quite fancy, don't they? And there's the character who I think is meant to be the heroine, really, which is what's her name that's going out with Dennis Quaid.
Yes.
Who talks about, how great it will be to have a great white in captivity. Yes.
Discover that there's a shark in the lagoon, there's this big debate, isn't it, between do we capture it and keep it or do we just kill it?
yeah, fantastic. What options?
poor shark. Let's ask the shark what he wants to. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's the character, despite the fact that obviously Dennis Quaid turned out to be a big star later on, and is quite a good actor, actually. You wouldn't know it from this. Lee Thompson, who's the kind of love interest in it for a while. She was also in a bunch of 80s films. But yeah, everybody's really unlikable. The setting's great. I mean, the setting is a real nod to Revenge of the Creature, which is the 50s movie where the sequel to Creature from the Black Lagoon, where it's also in Florida, and they capture him, the Gill Man, the monster of Creature from the Black Lagoon, is in captivity in Revenge of the Creature. And that does a much better job of exploring that interesting theme. You know, we've taken, in that case, a creature found in the Amazon, and we've put him into a national park in Florida to be exploited and to be an exhibit. And this movie doesn't want to touch on that, which is fine, but it also doesn't deliver what I want from a Jaws movie set in SeaWorld, which, let's face it, is, a bunch of fat, hideous tourists and kids getting horribly massacred during the 2:30 p.m. performance of Shamu or whatever. That's what we want to see. We want to see awful human beings watching the whale or whatever just getting eaten, torn to shreds. But the movie doesn't have, because the movie is too busy with its 3D effects, spending half an hour, what seems like half an hour, shoving a fish head that's very slowly floating towards the camera. It still look great in 3D.
No, it doesn't. It still doesn't.
Fish head's still there. Because the movie is so slow paced, because I get it. I mean, I get that the 3D process is this weird thing, and you want to shove stuff in people's faces, but this movie is so slow, and it doesn't have anything really happening except for the occasional severed arm. Dangled towards your nose, and the characters are so boring except for smarmy token English guy.
He's awful. I mean, to be fair, to start off with, I was like, is he English or is he Australian? I can't make out the accent. Mr. Philip Fitzroy.
It's a Hollywood idea of an English man.
It's exactly so English, Stephen. So English.
I'm here to.
We're all Fitzroyces around here. No, he is terrible, but he has a hilarious death. It's another one of those ones where you're like, you're mentioning grenades early on, are we? Let's remember this for later on.
Yes, that's another, we'll set this up early on.
Yeah, and Sean Brady, is like, comes back, the younger son comes back to visit Michael at SeaWorld, and, he's obviously, they've taken one thing from Jaws 2 in the fact that he's absolutely, properly traumatised and won't go, he says he won't go in the water. He will quite happily, strip off and go running into the lake at some point in this, doesn't he?
And he's such a one-note character.
Yes, like you say, the characters are just awful.
Terrible. And to the point where you almost, find yourself rooting for a smarmy, token British bloke, just because at least he's got some kind of personality. I mean, he's awful, he's obnoxious, and he's a bit like he
is horrendous, but he turns out good in the end, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a good old stick, really.
He gives up his life for the good of the team.
Yes, what's that all about? They wanted his character to have redemption. I mean, who wanted that?
It's there's no context to that either, is there? He's just smarmy, weird, creepy guy. Oh, by the way, let me help you. Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's such a strange one. I do love. I mean, there's things it could have been good. That's the really frustrating thing. As you said, you know, it's got a great setting. We really want to break free from Amity because that was getting boring. So it was the right thing to do. We don't really care about the Brody boys, but they're back, so let's put up with it. And there's brief moments where the sense of panic in the underwater tunnels, and actually the slightly hilarious bit where the corpse pops up to the glass and the tourists are traumatized by that, which is the kind of stuff we want to see, isn't it? You know, we want to see the world. And I quite like the idea of the biggest shark that comes, isn't it? Because the babies in captivity and the shark's mother comes.
That's another kind of thing that you're like, you know, that's not the shark. It's another one of those really obvious red herrings. Because I don't know an awful lot about sharks and motherhood. But I don't think they're really like your kind of whales and dolphins, you know, where they grow up together in a big pod. I'm pretty sure sharks are kind of come out of like a kind of like weird little egg type thing and are just left their own devices. Off you go, baby shark. Leave me. I never want to see you again. So it wouldn't be hanging around. That would not happen anyway in the first place. A mum and a baby shark would not go toddling into the lagoon together. So you're just like, oh, first off, this is awkward. And then secondly, you're like, it's tiny. It's really, really small. You know it's not the one killing people. And then when you find the mother is like, you know, a 35 foot long or something? Yes. And they haven't spotted it at all. And it's spent most of its time like hiding in an air tube. Oh, you're just like, oh, this is just ridiculous. Exactly. It doesn't make sense.
I mean, it's so poorly run that it allows this to happen. Why are the tourists still there? None of it makes sense. All of this is going on, they're still letting people in, albeit despite being SeaWorld about 20. You know, I've been to SeaWorld, there's about hundreds of people, you know, they're overrun. But they've got about 20. Oh, it's just nonsense. And singing, what's his name? Lewis Gossett Jr. Does he own the part? Is he the kind of
Calvin?
Calvin, which is a ridiculous mess. again, he's a good actor in real life. Lewis Gossett Jr. He's a good actor. You wouldn't know it again from this. Murray Hamilton type character. He just wants everything to stay open. Oh yeah, you know. It's technical problems.
It's slightly kind of misguided and just a little bit awkward, but at the same time it is kind of fun. I feel like it's more fun than Jaws 2 at times.
Yes, for sure.
Despite its flaws.
Yeah, there's some okay panic scenes. There's some hilarious kind of slow motion reaction shots of people. When the shark is, again, because the 3D and everything, the shark is very, very slowly heading towards the glass in the underwater tunnels. He's still coming. He's on his way.
Still coming.
That's a moment. They do something similar, but very well, in Deep Blue Sea, don't they? Do you remember that scene? Is it a body strapped to a trolley, a gurney, that slowly comes to, or very compared to this, quickly comes towards the breaking glass in that underwater thing. Deep Blue Sea does something really good with the concept of, oh shit, you know, the shark is coming to us and it's going to break through the glass. But this looks like it was miserable to make. It looks like it was long and tedious because 3D, you know, is a tough thing to actually get right. Especially back then, and the exploding shark, the roar. It's this the beginning of the sense that the shark roars and snarls?
Yes, it does. Yeah. Roaring. Yeah.
Just in case. It's not like
it's not scary enough. They start roaring.
guy that's sort of half swallowed helps out to, you know, while he's inside the shark's mouth to blow it up, and the jaws, the actual jaws of the shark get look like they've been stuck on the camera at one point, which again has the 3D effect, but it looks like a cartoon.
But yeah, that's another thing that makes you go, who thought this was a thing? You know, the English guy gets swallowed and he has his like grenade in his hand. But yes, considering, you know, it's a ginormous shark that's been eating everybody, you know, whole perfectly well, he gets kind of stuck in its mouth and it's just kind of arm is just kind of like hanging there.
We will get to more ridiculous survival things when we come to the jaws story. But yeah. Ludicrous.
It's crazy stupid.
Yeah. And its biggest problem, I think, is just what such a low body count. You know, man, could they not even... The lack of tourists being eaten is the biggest failure of Jaws 3. It's a shame, really. It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, no one really wants a remake of Jaws because that would be pointless. But I would love a good remake of Jaws 3. Because... It could have been really good. It could have been off the chain.
It could have been, but at least it was kind of like your kind of normal film length at the time, being about an hour and a half.
Oh yes,
done with, and put it to bed. So like, oh, that's over and done with. Maybe that will be the last one.
Yes. Yeah. And no one really wants it. I mean, it did, I guess it did well enough to obviously inspire Jaws the Revenge, which genuinely, and I was worried this was something I'd remembered wrong, so I watched the original trailer, and yes, the tagline of the trailer is, "This time it's personal." So I did check on that. This is indeed the one where Lorraine Gary, yes, Mrs. Brody, she's back. No one wants her back. She's the best we've got. We couldn't get Roy Scheider. Roy Scheider said, fuck off. Yeah. So Mrs. Brody's back, who can't act, but she was married to the head of Universal, so it doesn't matter. And this is the one where not only has the shark or the general shark population of the world got a grudge against the Brody family, but she seems to have a psychic connection to the shark. She's like Lassie or something. Oh,
yeah.
Timmy's stuck up in the well, is he? Oh, there's a shark coming to the Bahamas, which is where I've randomly gone for Christmas.
It must be a random kind of like great-grandchild of the two sharks that we killed in the first two movies.
I recognise that.
Out for revenge. Ways. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, this is as low as a series that began so well could ever get, really. I mean, even the lower down Amityville films are kind of fun, like Amityville Dollhouse is actually okay. And that's called Amityville Dollhouse. You know, that's how low they've got that. It's Amityville, but it's in a dollhouse because it's cheaper and smaller.
cheaper and smaller.
And they had a much lower budget than Jaws the Revenge. This is interesting because it's what gets forgotten, I think, and I've forgotten it too as I rewatched it, is it's a Christmas film.
True. Yes. It's you're absolutely right. You don't really pay that much attention to the fact that it is kind of at Christmas.
Yeah. And actually, the most Christmassy bit, which is, you know, the opening stretch, which one is it? Sean Brody.
Sean Brody, the younger son, who's perpetually scared of the water. That Sean, yeah?
Yes.
That one.
He's scared of the water, right?
What's he doing? What's he doing now?
Isn't he working on the water?
He is, isn't he? Isn't he like the sheriff or something?
Yeah, he's like he's the guy that goes out. And
basically his dad. Yeah.
In a coastal town. Well, he's still in Amity, isn't he, at the start? Yeah. That's where it happens. So he stayed in the coastal town, where he'll be working on the water on a frequent basis.
Yeah.
And it's even a call out. Totally petrified of water. And it's a call out while the town choir is singing like the first farewell and stuff. which is actually the only good, this is possibly the only almost good sequence in the film, which is where he goes out and he's, you know, on his boat, he's attacked by a very kind of fast cut look. You hardly see the shark, you see it in very quick kind of flashes, which is, you know, not a bad idea to do that kind of approach. And he gets his arm ripped off, from what I could tell. Yeah. And that's it for Sean. And that's an okay sort of start. We quickly find out that, yeah, Brody's, you know, you see Brody's picture on the wall in the Amity police station, and we find out he's died in the interim. Mrs. Brody is now a grandmother, and that means she has to have an incredibly irritating, high-pitched granddaughter who shows up to not be eaten, obviously, because we're three, you know, we're past the point of
Jaws. We don't do that anymore.
No dead kids. It's 1975. And essentially, with a bit of cost-saving flashbacks to the original, which for some reason are in black and white, including scenes from the actual film we're watching. Did you notice that? There's a point at the end where they steal the exploding shark images from the original anyway for the exploding shark. But there's a point at the end where, having shown Roy Scheider in black and white flashbacks, they also show scenes from the film we're actually watching also in black and white. What the fuck? I mean, we just watched those. Why are they black and white? Why do we need to see them again?
Are you that sort of padding, Stephen? I think it's padding.
I get to an hour and a half somehow.
Yeah, let's make this a bit more emotional. We'll wash it all out, make it black and white. Even though we've already seen this, it will hit harder.
I'm bereft. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, basically, what got me this time, this is the one where Mrs. Brody has turned into Dr. Loomis from the Halloween series.
Yes!
She spends the film saying things like, I knew it was coming. I even wrote down something, it waited all this time and it came for him. She's two scenes away from saying, it has a devil's eyes.
The thing that clinches it for me is the fact that it just basically does not acknowledge three ever happened.
No,
so you can literally just forget about three completely, like you say, like, you know, the Brody kids are back again, played by different people. They still haven't listened to a thing, you know, their parents have said to them. You know, they're both working as on the sea. I think Michael's like a marine biologist or something, working in the Bahamas. And then obviously Sean Brody's doing what his dad was doing, but he's still petrified of the sea. Yep, he gets eaten by the shark, as you say. So Michael comes over from the Bahamas, convinces his mum, Mrs. Brody, to go back with him to the Bahamas, where there hasn't been a great white shark sighting ever. And then, it's literally just kind of how it starts off. You're just like, you know, one of them's going to turn up and she's going to be like, it followed us. See, I told you. And yes, a great white shark does then turn up in the Bahamas and starts attacking Michael and all the people on his team. But once again, it's another thing like SeaWorld where they're like, oh, we need to kind of like tag it and watch it and conserve it, you know, encourage them into the area. But then Michael starts kind of getting really paranoid as well, doesn't he? He starts thinking that his mother might be right and the shark is actually like, you know, targeting him.
Yeah.
And his mother. Oh, yeah. It's just like you say, it's just, it's so awkward and so just cringy to watch. I mean, why they decided to bring Michael Caine in, who knows? Obviously, they're like, oh, we've got this giant budget, you know, we're like, you know, we're the Jaws films, goddammit. Let's get Michael Caine in.
And he famously, I think it's a story he used to tell on like Parkinson or something, but he famously missed, because he was filming this, he missed picking up his Oscar for the Woody Allen film, Hannah and Her Sisters, I think. And but he was quite happy about it because obviously, you know, this is
he was in the Bahamas.
He said, but you know, he said his fee paid for his house and he had a free holiday. And he plays this ridiculous character, this irresponsible pilot that, you know, for a joke and a gag, he hands over the controls of the helicopter to a little girl and then to whoever, doesn't he? Just to, oh, you know, you can take the reins.
Yeah.
Bizarre. I mean, he's, yeah, you've got the world's worst. I mean, and apparently, I mean, we'll come to the ending in a second. There's two different endings to this film, but we have the world's worst Jamaican accent from Mario Van Peebles. Who is the is what is his character? He's working with Michael on the boat, isn't he? Is he another marine biologist?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
And now I've seen Mary Van Peebles is quite fun in a bunch of 90s films, but he is far from a Jamaican. And
absolutely,
and the accent is this ludicrous, you know, almost British sitcom of the 70s style Jamaican accent.
He's cute though.
He's lovely, and I was reading. Because there's on the DVD, there's an alternative ending, which is even, well, you know, they're both ridiculous. But in the alternative ending, he doesn't miraculously survive being brutally chomped on like he does in I think the version that we got. But apparently they swiftly reshot the version that was released in Europe after the film had come out in America, because the only thing anybody liked was him. They were like, well,
you can't kill him off.
It's shite. But we do like Mario Van Peebles with his comedy Jamaican accent. So they made him live in at least one version that came out in this case for us.
Why did they give this? Because they kind of mock killing off Michael Caine as well. You're like, oh, thank God. Well, at least they've done that. And then you're like, oh, no, he's still alive.
Because he's helicopter. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you think he's gone, but he's Michael Caine, so and his character's ridiculous. I mean, he's obviously there as a love interest for Mrs. Yes. Brody, really, isn't he?
Yeah, and just kind of...
Which
kind
never
of,
really happens.
No, luckily, because that would have just been weird and awkward and ew.
Not sexy.
Yeah, not sexy at all, no. No, it would have been uncomfortable. But yeah, he is kind of used as that and kind of to kind of get her away from Michael, really, just as a distraction, really.
It's just, yeah, it's kind of painful. I think the use
it's
of...
It's scraping the bottom of the barrel, isn't it?
Way
They've
back,
run out of ideas.
Yeah, it's miserable. It's painful, actually. You do kind of see the shark a lot, I suppose, but there's long periods without nothing happening. You know, there's a lot of stuff with the grandkids and Lorraine Gary being unconvincingly spooked. She's a rubbish actress, let's face it. She ticks a box. She services her role in the original reasonably well because she doesn't have that much to do. She's the supportive wife and all that. But two, she's just there to make up the numbers because, well, the whole gang's back. Everyone that's not dead except for Richard Dreyfuss is back in, you know, in number two. The mayor's there to say his catchphrase. But here, she's the leading lady of the fourth. She's the main character and she can't act.
She's far too hysterical.
Yeah, and in her defence, the role is shite, isn't it? There's nothing. Yeah.
How am I supposed to make it believable that a shark is following my family to kill them out of revenge?
Well, that's it. Who actually signed off on that idea? Is it the most absurd of all, like, excuses for a sequel of all time? Maybe. It's Bobby in the shower in Dallas, isn't it? It's the last season, it was all a dream. Look, Bobby's in the shower. He's actually not dead.
Yeah.
It's like that, but with a shark.
Mm-hmm.
It pulls its punches as well. I mean, because there's nothing else happening, it has one or two stupid, it was only a dream, shark scares, fake scares.
Yeah.
It's got,
It's
got a big build-up to something that I thought was going to be exciting, which is the kids on the banana boat being attacked, where nothing again, really. I think one person gets eaten, but...
Yeah, but it's not a kid again.
No, you know they're safe. That's the problem. You know her granddaughter, is immune to whatever goes down. More slow motion, laughable slow motion of, those dramatic moments. It's just an awful film. It's why does a shark blow up at the end? It makes no sense.
Oh God, I can't even remember how that happens.
It gets impaled, and I think because there's two. If there's the alternate version,
oh
it
yeah,
doesn't explode.
They use the weird kind of like battery things, don't they, to make a frequency and explode it. Yes, I remember now. Oh, it's also memorable.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I think the if I've got it around the right way, it only gets impaled in one version of film, so it doesn't explode in one version, which is the one where Mario Van Peebles is definitely dead. But the one where it gets impaled and then miraculously it gets impaled in the part where the battery is and it explodes is the one where Mario lives.
It's the one where he survives. Yeah,
and
yes.
The exploding shark bits are entirely stolen from the exploding shark from the original.
Yes.
So they didn't restage it. They impaled it. And it's roaring. It's a roaring shark again.
Again, yeah.
And they show the flashbacks to Roy Scheider, which just feels like an insult, really. I mean, yeah. He was still alive at that point as well.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like those parts of the movies are probably the only bits that actually made me genuinely smile. But it's only because I was like, oh, yeah, that's from the first one.
He's
I remember
so
that.
Nostalgia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, entirely.
So, yeah, they should have stopped at two, really, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I wish they had.
Yeah.
I've rewatched them a few times, and I always hope they'll be better when I rewatch those, the last two. Almost looking forward to them, because I'm looking forward to seeing the SeaWorld bit again, and I remember the banana boat maybe better than it was. And
then after you've watched them, they're like, oh, yeah, still disappointing as ever.
I think so.
Shame. Yeah. But I suppose it is good to know, like, you know, as we said at the beginning, you know, Jaws led on to so many other great shark movies out there. You know, you don't just have them to fall back on, because that would be quite depressing, really, wouldn't it?
Well, the great thing is, because obviously every shark movie that came out afterwards owed its debt to Jaws. But some of the really good films we mentioned at the start are better than any of the sequels to Jaws. You know, 47 Meters Down is way better than any of the Jaws sequels.
I would also argue
Open Water as well. Bait's really good. The Reef is quite good, the Australian film.
yes, that's tragic.
Yeah, that's quite clever because it uses kind of trick photography.
Quite, proper like kind of the storyline to that is like gets you.
Yeah, that's exactly. And Deep Blue Sea is huge fun. Yeah. It's got that sequence.
Which was the recent one? Oh, that was a good one. I haven't seen it since it came out in the cinema, but I went to see it with Blake Lively. Ooh,
The Shallows. That's really good.
That's it. Yeah. And Steven Seagal.
The Seagull. Yeah, that's really suspenseful. I mean, that goes to
and
wild moments at the end, but it's still fun.
And one shark, yeah.
One woman on a rock kind of thing, isn't it? It's,
exactly.
Yeah, that's a better film than any of the Jaws sequels.
Yeah.
Even things like even the Italian ripoff, The Last Shark, is still more fun than Jaws 3 and Jaws 4. You know, there's a whole bunch of them.
I don't think I've seen that one. I think it's still
really
out there. I haven't seen.
Yeah. I think that's the one that got sued by Universal because I think it copied. It directly lifted some of the special effects moments from Jaws.
Oops.
There's the classic sequence in Zombie Flesh Eaters with the Shark, which is better than anything in the Jaws sequence.
One of the best scenes ever.
Of all time. So there were loads. Orca was kind of poo-pooed at the time, but Orca's actually quite a good movie. It's not got a lot in the way of kind of horror, but it actually goes, unlike the Jaws films, it goes to great lengths to kind of portray the majesty of whales. It's got a beautiful score by Ennio Morricone, actually, and although it is kind of a post-Jaws kind of, you know, when whales attack kind of thing, it's not quite as well. It does have you rooting for the whale, and it's got Richard Harris in it as well, so that's a good thing. But yeah, I think all those films, The Shallows, Deep Blue Sea, Bait, 47 Meters Down, there's a whole bunch that are excellent, and Open Water as well. I quite like that. I've forgotten who's in it. Shark Night. Do you remember that? Which is
God,
that's quite fun.
Yes. Yep. I think he's got in that it. Somewhere.
I thingy. It was a 3D one as well, but it was a cinema thing. Apparently, I still haven't seen it and I keep meaning to watch it, but apparently Deep Blue Sea 3 is genuinely really good. I've seen two is okay, but it's nothing special. But apparently, I will make a point of watching it. Deep Blue Sea 3 is the one that's really good.
Cool.
So that's, you know, that's maybe one to check out, but that's on my list. Finding Nemo with Bruce. That's like Shark Tale.
Sharky and George. I used to love that cartoon.
Yes,
I still remember the theme tune.
Yes. Yeah, so they're out there, and all of them are a zillion times better than Jaws 3 or Jaws 3.
Yeah.
There's no question. Sharknado, two-headed shark attack, or five-headed shark.
They are brilliant. It's been a 10-year anniversary of one of the Sharknadoes. I don't know if it was the first one or...
Oh, God, yes.
Very recently. I'm just quickly looking it up. Yeah, 2013 was the first Sharknado. So, yeah, 10 years. 10 years of Sharknado. I mean, thank God they stopped at 6, but those movies are a lot of fun. First three are my favourite. I think 3 is my actual favourite out of all of them.
I seem to remember being excited by 2 and then 3. Kind of smashing it, and then it tailed off, didn't it?
Then it went really stupid.
What about one last one for the road? What about Sky Sharks?
Yes, that I loved Sky Sharks. Sky Sharks was great. Had an amazing soundtrack as well. Yeah, I mean, zombie Nazis riding mechanized flying sharks. What's not to love about that? It was fucking brilliant. The opening sequence was fucking brilliant.
Was that on a plane? It starts on a plane, doesn't it?
Yeah. Sharks. Kids on a plane.
Yeah. One of the great regrets.
I need to get that. Is it out on DVD? Surely it's out on DVD. I mean, that was shown at Fright Fest about 2 or 3 years ago, maybe even. Because I remember that being advertised forever. 2020, that came out.
Yeah, well, one of the great, possibly the most annoying thing about COVID was that it meant that Fright Fest premiere of Sky Sharks was only online because
I watched it at home, didn't I?
And it would have gone down a storm with a big audience.
Yeah, just like drunk audience. That would have been so fun. Yeah, and a big drunk audience, like one of the last nights, you know, last films of the night or something. That would have been bloody awesome.
It's a midnight movie that's made to be. That was mental, and that's the kind of thing, you know, that's if you're going to make something like that, go to town.
Yeah, go nuts.
Exactly.
I think it is on DVD and Blu-ray.
I remember it coming out vaguely, but then it got forgotten about, didn't it? Like you said, all the hype before it, even when it's being made, there was a lot of hype, and there was an early trailer that we watched, and then it just sort of dwindled away, I guess. Too much other stuff around. Damn it.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have to order myself that because I haven't seen it since it came out, and that was awesome. Just for the epic opening. It was brilliant.
The opening was tremendous, yeah. There we go. Some Sky Shark type recommender. Yeah, Sky Sharks, everybody watch that. And
read
all of the other delights. And it's a shame about the Jaws series, but at least you've got an unsurpassed original.
Absolutely. Very fun. It is the best of the best.
It is, yeah. Nothing else comes near it. Some of the movies we just mentioned come near to it, I suppose, in terms of like
there's
massive suspense in 47 Meters Down, massively. And things like Bait and Deep Blue Sea have got real fun stuff too.
I mean, it kind of came a time where I love a giant practical rubber that doesn't really look like a shark. You know, they then shifted and went for like realistic ones, you know, actual proper shark footage and, you know, using real sharks as such, which is, it brings the dread more. But when it comes to like, you know, proper detailed gory attacks that are just kind of a blood fest and, you know, for the japes and the intestines and stuff, you can't beat your kind of foamy giant puppet shark, really, can you? When it was 47 meters down, you know, there's none of that schlocky, laughy, jokey stuff. This is pure, you know, you're going to have like heart palpitations.
Ruthless. yeah, that's totally anxiety-ridden stuff, isn't it?
There's a lot to be said for your kind of funny, foamy puppets and stuff as well.
Yeah, totally. Oh, man, 47 metres down. I was watching it at home as well, but I felt, I need to get out. I need to get outside. I felt really trapped. Yeah,
I think I was watching it. I was watching it late at night on my laptop with my headphones on. Fucking hell. I was sweating. I had my fist in my mouth. I was having trouble breathing. It was brilliant. Awful. I loved it. An absolutely amazing experience. Fantastic. But fucking hell. There's very few films that have made me do that. I mean, this is deviating slightly, but you said to me, you know, I needed to watch The Fall. I don't know if I mentioned this.
I watched it.
Not The Fall. It's just called Fall, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, incredibly intense and kind of claustrophobic and, you know, vertigo causing and stuff, but it still did not do to me what 47 meters down did. I don't think any film ever has. That's why that will always stick in my mind.
Yeah, I thought it was exceptional as well, 47 meters. I think the only thing I can compare it to in terms of that is probably, well, The Descent, actually, because I felt incredibly claustrophobic in that, but also Buried, the Ryan Reynolds film, which we watched at Fright Fest. It was a surprise film, a late replacement for a Serbian film that they weren't allowed to show. But Buried on the big screen.
Given the two, I've still never seen a Serbian film, and I don't really want to see it, but I've seen Buried many a time, and I would still go, you know what, I'd watch that. I'd rather watch Buried.
Buried is harrowing, I was right there with him. Serbian film is a possibly a different subject for another day, but it goes there and then some. Yeah, Serbian film, it does go to that very dark place, and probably will never shake off those images. Buried is, well, they're all, they fit together, don't they? These are like Open Water. They're all like, there's loads of this kind of film. They're all like films with about two or three characters, in Buried's case, just one, but most of them at least two, and in a confined space with a kind of 90-minute fight for survival that you're not convinced they're going to make it, which is...
Yeah, it really taps into your emotions and you're invested in them. And
I love that high concept.
You want them to make it, but you have no idea which way it's going to go.
Yes. Oh, another one. No sharks, but Adam Green's Frozen, not the one with Let It Go, which is the three people on a ski lift. That's really good. And I think there's wolves, you know, they're trapped on a ski lift. There's wolves downstairs, or on the ground, rather. And that was a past.
Well, no, I've not seen that one. I've seen the Disney one.
Yeah. Imagine, I reckon that's been led to a few mix-up, hasn't it? We got Frozen for you. Come on, Alfie, let's watch it. Fucking hell, what's those wolves?
Mom, I don't remember there being wolves
in their pants. And there's other things as well, isn't there? Like Burning Bright, which is, it sounds shit, but it's the one with the tiger in the house. That's really good. Tiger in the house during a storm or something. Crawl is the one with the alligators in the house.
Yes.
Flood, which is quite good.
Crawl is brilliant. I love Crawl.
Good, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a bit far-fetched, but it's also great.
What about Blackwater?
I don't know if I've seen Blackwater.
That's good. That's like essentially three people up a tree with a prop.
I have seen that one. Yes, I have seen that one. Yeah, that's another kind of like really freaky, gruesome, like limbs being torn off. And yes, I do remember that one.
That's very
good.
And it's very small scale again, you know.
Yeah, in a way, it's more atmospheric and a bit more real than Crawl is. Crawl gets a bit stupid, but...
Yeah. I think at some point there was an attempt.
But Crawl is really good.
Oh, Crawl's great fun. Yeah. Yeah, I like the idea of that. That was proper tense. If you go with it, it was...
I think that's why I love those kind of like monster movies, animal movies.
Yeah.
They're some of my favourites.
Oh, definitely. And they all owed the debt to, you know, to the original Jaws,
Yeah.
one way or another. Yeah, tremendous. Well,
Well,
that's it, I think. Gosh, that was
yeah.
good, wasn't it?
That was good.
We shall be back in, you'll be hearing this in August, I think, and we'll be back in September
We
for
will.
something completely different, Sarah, something far from the ocean and far from sharks and Mrs. Brody moaning about something. What are we doing next time?
Hallelujah. Yes, next time we do. Well, this kind of came about with the kind of discussion we were having about Black Mirror, and we were going on about how much we love Charlie Brooker and how great he was. And even though Black Mirror, the recent season of Black Mirror, I really enjoyed, it's been really good. It's a bit more back on form to how it kind of lost its way the last few seasons, if you ask me. I feel like this recent season, there's been some really good ones. There's been some proper, like, atmospheric ones. There's been some schlocky, weird horror ones. But we kind of said to ourselves, you know what? The best thing Charlie Brooker ever did was Dead Set, which is a zombie mini series he did based on the UK version of Big Brother with actual characters, or I say characters, actual people from Big Brother, like Davina McCall. You know, people of a certain age will remember Big Brother back in the day when it first started. Charlie Brooke has taken this idea and gone, what the fuck would happen if there was a zombie apocalypse? And it was so good. It came out just before Walking Dead kind of came out, about the kind of time like True Blood and stuff were around. Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, that kind of a thing. Charlie Brooke has taken it, given it a very, it's a very like British thing, if you ask me, but really awesome. One of the best zombie mini series that's ever been around. So yeah, we decided we were gonna have a good old chat about that, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Yes, that's a great one. I've not seen that for a long time, and it seems to have been slightly forgotten about, I think, with the yeah, he's had a lot of praise, quite rightly, for Black Mirror, which, as you say, has gone through some kind of great and less great episodes. But yeah, Dead Set's a cool one.
Yeah, this was
Marvelous.
before Black Mirror. I said, well, I don't know, potentially
I think so.
around the kind of same kind of time as maybe the first series. This could have potentially been like a spin-off from Black Mirror or something, or he kind of originally had it as a Black Mirror episode and went, you know what, I could go a little bit further with this. Because even though it's a mini series, it was still like six episodes. You know, it's got a long story, it's got a really good plot. It's proper good. Proper good. So yeah. We're
It's
going to
really
have a
good.
good old chat about
Yes. I remember a very haunting kind of ending as well. Yeah,
that.
that's
Really,
cool.
some actual genuine scary bits. I've watched it so many times and I still jump at certain bits. And it's got the great Andy Nyman in it. So many awesome characters, people that we associate with weird 90s kind of TV series and stuff. Kevin Alden, who I absolutely love, is
Oh,
like a really
yes.
great character. But yeah, I'll stop talking about it because I could talk about it a lot. So we'll wait until the next episode. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be so good.
Nice. Andy Nyman shitting in a bin, right?
Yes.
Oh, I do remember that. I love Andy Nyman. Excellent. That's coming next time. Andy Nyman
Yes.
shitting in a bin, or as it's known,
Yay.
Dead Set. But
Yay.
he was great because he's in debt. He was in oh God. It's gone. No, it's back. He was in Severance at about the same time, and he's very funny in
Another
Severance. I
fucking
love
brilliant film.
Severance.
Yes,
I would love
that's
to.
great,
We'll
that
cover
is.
that at some point. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, so let's do an Andy Nyman.
I was in the cinema. I watched Severance in the cinema, and I think
Yes.
we were the only two people that were laughing at the bit where the obnoxious American accidentally shoots the passenger plane out of the sky.
It's great.
There's
It's
a
so
bit with a foot
brilliant.
on the bus. Danny Dyer is really fun. Everyone's great in
Danny
Severance.
Dyer is one him yeah he that's
What's the other guy?
one of his good ones. Hit that and
Yeah.
Doghouse.
Doghouse is great fun with the zombie hairdressers and things. Yes. Maybe we'll do a double O. Yeah. Severance is underrated and hilarious. Just tremendous. British horror at its best.
Yay.
Yeah. So that's something cool next time.
Yes.
Well, that's it though. Thanks everyone for listening to our tragic demolition of the Jaws sequels, but at least celebration of the great original.
Yay.
Thank you to Sarah. We see you next time, Sarah, for a bit of the
You're
old
welcome. Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Marvellous. Thanks, everybody. And we shall see you in September. Bye for now.